Welcome everyone to Electronic Talks podcast, episode 28. I'm very excited and happy to have this guest today, which is a composer, one of the best composers and current artists in Stockholm, I would say.
Oh, wow.
Theodor Wolgers, welcome.
Thank you.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well.
Yes.
I had a nice and quite slow day in a good, I had place for doing the things that I had to do, so...
Very
I'm
nice.
In a good mood.
Good
excited
to
be here.
Glad to have you here. And maybe just to start with an announcement that you're actually playing on Saturday here
yeah.
in Stockholm.
I'm playing at Kulturhuset on Saturday. And I'm bringing James Heather, amazing pianist from London, to play before me. And I'm very excited to doing this headline show and really... making place for the music on Dialogues live.
Yes. I have the impression that the live experience is something very important to you. Something
yeah.
that you care about a lot. Like, for an instance, one of the tracks from Dialogues, you recently released it in a live version. And it seems like that experience is something that you cherish. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's very important. I see the music that you have the first room when you record it and you release it. But then I think the real like when music is living and the culture is living is when you meet people and you can experience it together in a room. And that's where the value is most important to me, to have this shared experience. And Dialogues is... about sharing and connecting to other people because they have a different like artist than on every track and it's about getting meeting people. So
that's a very interesting connection actually, because you're so basing Dialogues, as you say, on these kind of collaboration with different artists on different tracks.
Yeah.
And how did you come about to select these artists?
It was a combination of artists that I listened to before I reached out to them and some artists. I decided to go to London and to Berlin and start doing the album.
Mm-hmm.
And then me and my manager looked around for which artist was in the town. And then we connected and I met nearly up with everybody and having a session.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had some artists from Stockholm and then one remote with Abel Mugger from Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this idea with connecting to artworks by
right.
Magritte, because I had done some improvisations with postcards from exhibitions
yes.
during the fall. And I think it was a nice connection and a good way to start. So I just put in some another artist and a picture and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And explore what could happen with my art with these new circumstances.
Yes.
That was really a process-based album in a way.
And why René Magritte in particular, would you say?
I think it was, I tried a lot of different artworks, but I fell for the surrealism and René Magritte because it's it was most things to see and make music into. It was a lot of poetics and a lot of it made me creative in a way. So
I would also say could you tell us a little bit about the visuals that were created for Dialogues? Because I feel there's also this influence, kind of surrealist
yeah.
vibe to that. How did those come about?
Yeah, it was really hard for the photographer because I showed him this this world and this picture and said, hey, I wanted to create this in the content and the visuals. And so we animated some a burning head and some curtains that were flying that is taken from the artworks and wanted to combine modern photography with René Magritte and we did that and everything is very based on the artworks of René Magritte but it's in a new way. So
yeah, and I also think there's other interesting aspects to the album. It seems like you have been maybe even more experimental than before with the soundscapes and production techniques. Could you maybe tell us, is that because of the collaborations, or is it like, do you have a whole vision for the soundscape in your mind?
Both. I think it's really the collaborations had their impact, and I was like interested in see what happened if different worlds combine. And it's a quite different artist. We have everything from like Biergarten, who is a saxophonist player, to like Fake, who is like more mellow EDM, like melodic. And I also had this like surrealist concept that I was, it was okay for the soundscapes to be very like dreamy and big and a lot of sounds, and also different, because this like dreamy album that I had in mind making. So it made me quite free in the production, and it was also really interesting in the like world between the electronic and the acoustic. And I think that's a place where you can do very interesting soundscapes and very interesting music, and that I wanted to explore.
Yeah, it's a very interesting area with a lot of potential. So, I mean, how would you describe like the sound of the music yourself, if you could put words to it?
I think it's, you can call it like instrumental piano-based music with a lot of ambience, effects, electronics, and also beats, and maybe like that.
Could you tell us a little bit about your inspirations in that field? You already mentioned that you spent time in Berlin in producing and so on. Or do you have any particular mentors or inspirators?
Yeah, definitely. Like classic. The first one was, of course, Nils Frahm, that opened up this field, I would say. And Olafur Arnalds, and like, I also listen to a lot of like electronics artists like Max Cooper and Rival Consoles, and the whole like scene. But I would say those four as a start.
And if we go back a little bit to your previous album, the Distractions in a Capitalist World. Exactly. Could you tell us a little bit about the theme of that for those that haven't heard it or listened to the commentary yet?
Okay, yeah, it's basically about the feeling of being trapped in this capitalist society when you are making art that doesn't have this like measurable values, but you have to be measured, and that could make a lot of distractions, and you don't know why you're doing things and for who. And that was like a way of looking into myself, and like and I had this like metaphor that you're taking a walk in the city, and but you always is disturbed by noise from advertisements, or noise from like building constructing workers or people, and it's very hard on that like city road to get a clear vision of who you are and why you're doing. So I wanted to explore that on the album.
Yeah.
And because my way out of this like capitalist stress, or what you could say, is making music. So
yes. So you also were, you used samples and other things in order to enhance that effect.
Yeah. I had some more conceptual work from the album, and some more just like beautiful flowy tracks. But I have one that was called Distraction that is based on sounds from the city, and like a piano that tries to find its place, but this noise comes in and interrupt. And also used, because I read the book of the Swedish philosopher Martin Hägglund, This Life, and then I asked him to read in some part of it, so I'd made some music to it. And I also found like a poem online that by Renan Priest that is on the that ends the album. So
very interesting. So you've moved from a kind of philosophy based album into something a little bit more dreamlike or abstract in some way, right? If we go back a little bit to when you started playing the piano, you were about 14, is that correct? Or was it even earlier?
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. And how did you get into it and why did you stick to it?
So I actually started playing some guitar and then I started out in playing bass in a band back in my hometown Strängnäs because everyone wants to play guitar, so the baddest guitarist has to play the bass. And then I had like the band leader who was a really talented songwriter and pianist start to I learned music from him and then I started to like exploring just the piano, starting taking classical lessons and just started to compose at the same time when I played bass in the bands. And but piano and the composition was like my own space. And then I kept playing the bass and kept playing in those bands. But later on, I like focused more on the piano than on the composition side, like some 6 or 7 years later. And then I also come into like modern production and had some hip hop band, like a pop duo, made some soul R&B music. So I really learned like the being in a studio and doing music that way. And then I think I combined these two worlds, like the classical lonely piano, not lonely, but the piano with the production world. And that's where I am now, combining like these two cultures.
Yeah, to something more modern together with your kind of personal melodies.
Yeah, it definitely has, because I played some jazz and I played some pop and I think you can hear it in my music, but I also have the classical background, so it's minimalistic but also melodic and also,
And I think there was a period in the beginning of your career when you were attending the Royal Music School, right? And at some stage you were considering disrupting that school. Why was that a thought in your head, if you go back to that period?
Yeah, I think during the second year of Royal College of Music, where I studied jazz composition, I felt like there was no place for my kind of music in the institution. My music was too simple, too like tonal, or too. But that was just in my head, but I didn't feel that I was a part of the institution, so I went really like wanting to be a pop producer instead of making art music as an antithesis, or what you call it. Antithesis, maybe.
Exactly, that sounds about right, I think. And then after you did finish that.
I had like this year off where I focused on doing the production, and but I really felt that I didn't get the full potential of my creativity in that field. So then I decided to start and go my third year and making my own music. And that was the start of the Tele Volgers, like artist project, like a search for finding back to the roots. And then I decided to do music just with me and the piano to see what come out. And I all the compositions on my first like trilogy, Memory, Sensation and Hopes, was from like 10 years time, from maybe 16, 15 to 25, and I did take the 11 best songs and record it on my piano, and then the project started
from that period.
Yeah.
And also within that period is kind of a pivotal moment where you had your compositions performed at one of the big music halls in Sweden called Berwaldhallen, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. That was during my first year when I felt very inspired still at the school. And I just jumped on the first, during my first semester, symphonic orchestra piece with no knowledge at all. But It was also kind of an experience when I had done that. It was like, in one way I could do music now. I can focus on what I really want to express. And then those other questions came to mind.
Popped up.
Yeah.
And
it was like a test for me.
Uh-huh. And how do you look back at it now? If you
I'm very proud of it, because mm-hmm. I never written symphonic orchestra music since then. And mm-hmm. I'm very glad that I pulled it off. And
yeah.
It's quite interesting music, actually. So I'm proud of it.
Mm. And what would you say, like, the role of that trilogy of EPs played in your development as a composer and pianist? What changed within you with that project?
The change was that I have no thought of this, like, being anything more than just me putting out this music for just, you know, sometimes you need to let it go from yourself so you don't bury it all your life.
Yeah.
So it was more of a personal travel.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just like started rolling by itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's opened up this opportunity to, because now, like, 4 years later, I'm just mainly part of what I do. But that was never the plan.
Ah.
So it really opened up to kind of other life, actually.
Mm.
Then I really wanted to develop from just this only piano,
mm-hmm.
like compositions. But I think it was an important starting point.
Mm.
And I'm really thankful for what happened with that, and mm-hmm. that I released it, and that it started this project.
Yeah. Was it hard to for the first releases for you, or?
Yeah. Kind of, or it took like 9 to 10 years.
Yeah, that's it.
So, but when I decided to do it, it wasn't super hard, but it took the time,
mm-hmm.
the year to like do it. But it was the way up to deciding to release it that was the harder part.
The kind of the mind part of it, yeah. in some sense.
And I can see a lot of like friends who are making music or like bands or are in bands or producing music, that sometime they almost always start a solo project.
Yeah.
To really having all the decisions creatively. And I think
mm-hmm.
this is a really common trip for creatives to do.
Yeah.
Or what would you say?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. To be able to have that freedom to express more accurately what you want to say yourself, right?
Yeah.
Mm. And you mentioned that you were kind of being transported from one world to another, or discovering a new world. When did it dawn on you that, like, you had a new possibility, or that you were in a new landscape of your life?
Maybe like a year after the first release,
mm-hmm.
because then I also signed some contracts, mm-hmm. management, a new label, and a booking agency, and it was starting off a new way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I have realized it yet.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird, and it's also like a quite hard genre to be in, mm-hmm. or like it's very hard to really see where you are, because it's a genre that has a lot of like playlists and a lot of places where people could listen to your music,
mm-hmm.
but it's hasn't like a live scene here in the Nordics, or
yeah.
I think it's like a modern way of the composer and the piano concert.
Yeah.
Is a developing but it isn't like based in the classical world. It comes from the more indie, some call it like indie classical,
mm-hmm.
and I think there is like a lot of people who are wanting to see this music live, but I don't know that it exists. And I think it's one of the modern composers, but you're also mm-hmm. a composer and artist, and so it's a exciting field, but also hard to, you know, you can have a lot of streams and then you have a concert and maybe like no one shows up.
Right.
yeah. because it's very hard to see where you are.
It must be hard to communicate with the audience. It must be because you do have a lot of, you know, place and people listening to your music, but maybe all of them don't even know that they could see you live or that opportunity exists.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Like 95% of the people don't know they are listening to me.
Yeah,
listening to me, I think it's like, and then maybe some of the others don't know that it's a concert form of music.
Mm-hmm.
Because of, I don't know, yeah, it's a weird genre.
Yeah. I mean, how would you describe like being on the playlist? Is both a blessing and a curse, or how would you describe it personally?
It's both a blessing and a curse.
Mm. Mm.
I'm really thankful for that my music is listened to through all of the world, and mm-hmm. that it could be a part of people's lives. And I'm,
mm-hmm.
But it's also a wish for connecting with the people and connecting, and that's why I really go for the live and trying to build like a live community or like a live
mm-hmm.
Being like more of a real artist in the world.
Right. Like connect the recordings to the live performance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That takes some time. So, but I'm glad I have started doing live shows for the last 2 years, and now I'm playing this gig at Kulturhuset and some mm-hmm. others, and I played that way at West, so it also is connecting more and more. Mm-hmm. But it's
how was that actually, like playing for a festival audience as compared to like more of a classical scene?
It was in a church late in the night.
Yes.
So I had a really good venue.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have would like to experience, because I can make my set more like clubby if I want, and I can play solo piano, I can play solo piano and a string quartet, and I mm-hmm. can play like a more electronic set
mm-hmm.
with combining solo piano with the electronics that I'm gonna do on Kulturhuset, and I also think I can do an even more clubby set
mm-hmm.
And that's very interesting too.
Yeah.
So it would be cool to also try to play on a real club scene.
Yeah.
I have played on like Trädgården in Stockholm two
mm-hmm.
times
mm-hmm.
and it worked quite well.
Yeah.
So that's also an interesting field for this kind of music too, that it could all be played on both like Way at West and at Berwaldhallen at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Would you say like, do you have a scene that was your best memory of a live show for you? So far.
It's hard. I think when I played my last gig in Stockholm at Södra Teatern,
mm-hmm.
The whole gig was a really cool experience.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I don't know why, but that was the memory I came up with.
Yeah.
It was like this connection, and everyone stood like quiet and really listened to me and to the music, and we had like this, it was a nice connection.
Mm-hmm. And if we go further into like your kind of electronic influences and your thoughts about, you know, combining the classical piano and electronics, how do you approach that when you produce? Like what is your go-to way of composing in that way?
I compose very like intuitive,
mm-hmm.
and I have built up like a new live set that is very a lot of synths, and I have some effects, and it's very intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
So and I bought some synths, so I play with it,
mm-hmm.
like see what maybe composing the piece at start at the piano, or composing like a pattern or something that you can like loop,
mm-hmm.
and then jam around it and find these sounds that you really love, and then just building from there. So mm-hmm. it's
so a lot of experimentation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I can have like a thought of like this picture that I used on dialogues, that's mm-hmm. Maybe I want to have the clouds, and then I make a soft like synth sound as the cloud, and then I see something else that makes another musical narrative, and then put it all together.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, I just go in into the flow and let it flow.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like quite a process, kind of creating a cloud but through sound, right?
Yeah.
In a sense.
It's very nice to have something else to connect the music to. Mm-hmm. Because I also started exploring that when I'm done, like, music from some films.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing what it can bring to your creativity mm-hmm. to have something else than just, because instrumental music can be very, very abstract.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes hard to put a value on it when you have done a lot of pieces.
Yeah.
And then when you combine it in a concept and you're starting to get this structure in yourself, it's mm-hmm. much more easier to work.
Yeah.
With a sound or with a picture or with like a moving picture or with
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Could you tell me a bit more about, because you've done at least a couple of documentary films, I think, and
two documentaries
oh. and parts of soundtracks of two Netflix series, I think.
Yeah,
if that's correct.
Yeah, or I have a licensed song to one, and then I've done some. It's called Diestic Music, the music yes. that is played on the scenes to a
yeah.
Netflix show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those approaches must have been very, very different, I would assume.
Yeah.
Like making music for a documentary film. How did you work with the filmmakers to create that?
So I had like almost the whole film was done.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have used, it's quite common in the movie world that you use something called temp track, mm-hmm. a temporary score.
Yeah.
Where the editors need to have music, and then the composer come in and had to like, and they really love the temp music, and it could be like John Williams or like mm-hmm. Hans Zimmer and Ennio Morricone at the same time.
Yeah.
And then you have to like combine it, but it also could be good because then you could see or hear in some way what the directors are searching for.
Mm-hmm.
But then I just had the scenes and I had the picture and I had this like guidelines and also then the intuitive process
mm-hmm.
with seeing the picture and start composing to the picture.
Yeah.
And see what happens.
Mm-hmm. So we already established you draw a lot of inspiration from other art forms.
Yeah.
So what other kind of art is inspiring to you outside of maybe Magritte or the ones mentioned?
Now I'm actually working on a project where the poetry is really in a focus,
mm-hmm.
and I can't say so much about it because mm-hmm. it's gonna be revealed next year. But
exciting!
Mm-hmm. It's really based on like a place and poetry.
Mm-hmm.
So
more now getting into the sphere also of the written word, even yeah. if you've touched upon that before, that's a little bit of a new domain yeah. as well.
Mm-hmm. A more concrete like combination of both poetry and music in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Am I exploring with?
Mm-hmm.
And then let's see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So it's kind of more you do your own way. You do that project your own way and it can develop in different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any other types of expressions that you're experimenting with that you're excited about at the moment when it comes to your own music?
No, I actually started a master program in film music.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited about learning more about that process and getting even deeper into the art form of making film music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See what that will do with my own music.
Yeah, of course, because that's also making it, especially if you do it for fiction, yeah. it can be very strict limitations and also possibilities, I guess.
Yeah, and I haven't done fiction, so I'm really excited about trying to do fiction and doing some shorts and doing
mm-hmm. And would you say within the domain of film music, do you have any classics that you've always loved yourself?
No, it's actually hard. I'm not like a film nerd, or my way into film music is the way from music. And that the documentaries I did was like, yeah, they liked my expression and then I done it. But yesterday I saw like Oppenheimer, by the music by Ludwig Göransson.
Oh, yes.
And that's a really quite close to the kind of music that I want to do with the electronics, combining with the acoustics and the dark and the like suggestive and beautiful music at the same time. So right now I would say he, as a composer, I really also like the Euphoria series soundtrack by Labyrinth.
That's a great one.
Yeah. And the combination, yeah. But I haven't, I will search for the classics too, not when I have.
When you, yeah, when you're in this new program, I guess you're going to delve into that.
Yeah,
fully.
To a lot of old films, and I'm excited about seeing. But also, like, interesting to see how I can bring my kind of music into the moving picture, not like doing a John Williams score or a Hans Zimmer score.
Of course, I think we've had
a
lot of
and
that.
We need something new. We don't need maybe something new, but I want to do my kind of music. And like just understanding the relationship between the music and the picture is a lot to think about.
It is. It, I mean, it seems like very much like a natural development, like giving the importance of the images, even for dialogues, to go in that direction. Just moving between, you know, still images and moving images.
Yeah, that's true. Thanks for pointing out.
In some way. So, I mean, it doesn't feel, it feels like a natural progression in some way.
Yeah. You're also searching for, like, ways of putting out your creativity, because you can only do, like, maybe one album a year.
Yeah.
And I have more music in me.
Yeah.
And then I think, like, film music is a good way if I manage to do more to put out my creativity.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Yeah, because also, like, I guess a personal album takes another kind of time and depth to actually realize. So you would kind of need projects on the side from that.
Yeah. You have the cycle of creating it, post-production, releasing it, playing it live, and then making it new. So it's like quite long cycles.
Yeah.
And it's nice to don't not like only being that.
Of course.
I always like to do different things.
Yeah. Try different domains.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for the people that wants to see what's coming up, you're having the concert on Saturday.
Yeah.
Is there anything else they should be aware of if they're interested in following your work?
Yeah, so I'm releasing I did record four of the songs on Dialogues at Atlantis Studio, just piano. And so I think the next song is coming out on Friday, and then
perfect.
An EP comes out in October. Then we also have some remixes actually coming on the Dialogues album.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
I guess it's not, you cannot divulge whose remixes it is as of now, but could you tell us a little bit about what kind of style it's of remixes?
It's quite different.
Yeah.
Like melodic dance music and like post-classical, experimental and ambient.
Very, very exciting.
Yeah.
And I'd be looking forward to seeing the concert now on Saturday here in Stockholm. So at the Culture House.
Yeah, Culture House.
So thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you for having me here.
Yes. And that was it for Electronic Talks podcast episode 28. Thanks for watching, and see you again next week.